Hey everybody, Paul Brooks here, back with you again for another B-Movie Mania interview. On today's episode, I'm chatting with writer and director Addison Binnick, who has a movie out now called Psycho Ape. The film stars Kansas Bowling and Bill Whedon, and after you listen to this interview, you can check out the interview I did a few years back with Kansas Bowling and her sister Parker. I will put a link to that one below on bmoviemania.com. Thank you to Addison for chatting with me. I really enjoyed Psycho Ape, so make sure to pick up your own copy of the film on DVD. I'll have links below to that as well. But right now, here's my interview with Addison Binnick.
It's B-Movie Mania!
Addison, welcome to B-Movie Mania. Thank you for joining me.
Hey, thanks for the invite, man.
Absolutely. So you are the director and the co-writer of a new movie that came out recently called Psycho Ape. And you and I were just talking about you've done some screenings recently around the country in different places. Just talk a little bit about how this movie came to be, sort of what the inspiration for it was, and what you've been doing lately with these screenings.
The inspiration for Psycho Ape came in 2017 when just randomly one night I had this dream where I was filming a friend of mine and he was running around wearing his gorilla costume that he would wear at Halloween parties. And he was wielding this obscenely large butcher knife, like straight out of an Itchy and Scratchy cartoon. And I woke up and I came up with the title Psycho Ape because, Psycho from like Norman Bates, you know, and obviously Ape. And in my dream, he was wearing sneakers and the ape costume was all untied and, you know, strings were dangling down. And I thought that's a really funny idea for a movie. So I kind of gestated on that idea or that title for a couple years. And we started writing. We wrote the opening slumber party massacre sequence when we were having beers together at a bar. And we were just trying to make each other laugh. And we came up with the concepts of, well, what if, you know, there's a teenage slumber party going on, but it's all played by girls who are obviously 20-year-olds. And they're, you know, playing like Congo, the board game, and talking about eight movies. But then, you know, their boyfriend shows up, who's also clearly an adult, and scares them because he's dressed in an ape costume. But they shoo him away, and he gets jumped by an actual ape. And then the ape puts on an ape costume and sneaks back into the slumber party. But they rip off the ape mask, thinking that it's their boyfriend. And so now we have an ape on an ape scenario, like a Scooby-Doo cartoon. And that's where we started laughing hysterically. And we were like, this is a movie. Like, this is the opening scene of our movie. Like, we got to make this. And I pitched the idea to a friend of mine who was also an independent filmmaker. He made the movie Hectic Knife, which is currently being distributed by Troma. And because I knew that he had, you know, experience in making an actual movie, that he was somebody that I could collaborate with on this project. Because before that, I had been doing movie riffing stuff. I love Mystery Science Theater and Riff Tracks. And for years, I had been doing a show called Movies to Watch on a Rainy Afternoon for YouTube. And these were like 15 to 20 minute long riff reviews that I would kind of edit together, sort of like the best of the worst clips from cheesy B movies that I would find. And I would write jokes and record this commentary for these episodes. And, you know, I've been doing it for, you know, about 10 years, and I had about 100 episodes on YouTube. And then I also did a show called Tremasterpiece Theater for Troma, where it was a full-on like episode of Mystery Science Theater where we had puppets and stuff riffing on Troma movies in front of a silhouette, or as silhouettes in front of a green screen. And so I had experience with this kind of stuff, but I'd never made a movie. So my friend Greg and I started writing the script, and we started collecting our cast, you know, Bill Whedon, Kansas, just based on the fact that, like, Bill liked True Masterpiece Theater, thought it was funny and wanted to work with me. And Kansas, I had done her movie BC Butcher for Movies to Watch on a Rainy Afternoon. So she was a fan of me for the riffing, but she was also a fan of Greg because she really liked Hectic Knife. So we all just kind of were fans of each other and wanted to work on this really silly ape movie. You know, it was going to be low budget, shot on mini DV tape, going to be a very loose ship, you know, lots of gags and improv style comedy. And that's kind of just what attracted everybody to our project. We would get together every Thursday for months on end, just Greg and I and my roommate who plays the ape. We called it Psycho Ape Thursdays. And what we would do is we would watch a crummy ape movie like King Kong Lives or Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes as sort of just like inspiration to, you know, see like, well, this is, you know, why this movie is considered so bad. So let's do that exact thing or let's poke fun at that. And then we'll inject that into Psycho Ape. And then we would either we'd have a writing day on a Psycho Ape Thursday, or we would have a shooting day where we would invite somebody over to my apartment and we would film a random kill scene, just sort of improv style on the spot. But so once we had, you know, a good chunk of the movie just kills shot, that's when we launched a Kickstarter and got $7,000 to hire Kansas and Bill, went on to New York, filmed in New York, brought them back to Michigan, filmed with them in Michigan, and then flew them back home to New York. But then, you know, like everybody else in the world, we had to stop shooting because of COVID, and we put the movie on pause for about 6 months, maybe, in 2020. We only needed a couple more scenes left to shoot, so we kind of waited it out. And it wasn't until maybe August of 2020 when we finally wrapped production on just a couple of small scenes and insert shots. And then the movie was done. We released it October 2020. We had one theatrical play and then everything shut down again. So we had our premiere and then 2 weeks later, all theaters were closed for months. And it's been really surprising and very, it's been this sort of renaissance of Psycho Ape in the last couple of weeks, because even though the movie had its theatrical premiere October 2020, last week I drove down to Iowa City because it had a theatrical screening. It had a theatrical screening in Delaware 2 days later, Friday and Saturday in Delaware. And that was crazy. I wasn't there for that one, but I heard about it. You know, a patron actually got sick during the movie. Some of the special effects got to him, and I guess he must have had an overactive imagination or a weak stomach. And so, you know, we got reports out of Delaware that there was a guy who had to leave because he was throwing up in the theater, which is just crazy to me. You know, the special effects are so low budget and so cheesy that I can't believe that, you know, chocolate pudding substituted as ape poo made someone puke. I mean, that's crazy. But that's what they said. And then, you know, all these reviews have, you know, started pouring out as a result of these screenings. So a lot more people have been seeing the film and talking about it and posting about it on social media. And again, you know, 2021, I just kind of thought that, like, well, you know, we had our premiere, we've been selling DVDs, I went to a convention, you know, I sold about 35 copies, and I kind of just thought, like, well, this is the end, you know, we made our movie, it took 2 years. And, you know, we hit our audience, our 50 minutes are up, and we're just kind of like just gonna go move on to the next thing. But because of these screenings and because of, you know, this story of this guy getting sick at the screening in Delaware, like all of a sudden people are really interested in the movie again, which is awesome. You know, it's so cool.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, congratulations for the continued success with the screenings. COVID has obviously put a monkey wrench in a lot of projects for a lot of people, but I'm glad that, you know, despite all the difficulty, you guys got things worked out. I watched the movie myself for the first time a couple of nights ago, and I have to tell you, I had a smile on my face the entire time. I really didn't know what to expect, you know, like I had really just only looked at the poster. I hadn't seen a trailer or anything, but it is so funny. It is so weird. It is so stupid in such a good way. You mentioned Mystery Science Theater. I'm just curious kind of if you can talk about some of your other influences, or if there were any particular, you know, influences that you had, that you injected into this movie from other things.
Oh, absolutely. The initial skeletal structure that I had written with a separate friend of mine who I wrote the intro gag with, the ape on an ape mask, his and my initial pitch to each other was, let's make sort of Halloween, but with an ape instead of Michael Myers. So that's why the character of, you know, Dr. Loomis becomes Dr. Zoomis, and instead of a psychiatrist, he's a zookeeper. And so that was kind of the initial, like, that was what we wanted to do. And when we contacted Kansas Bowling, she was just going to be another victim in the opening slumber party massacre scene. But when she found out that Bill was going to be involved and that Greg was going to be shooting the movie, she wanted to be in the whole project. So we basically wrote this character of Nancy Banana for her to be in the entire movie rather than just a victim in the opening scene. So she became this, like, sort of Laurie Strode type character, kind of. But yeah, that was kind of the influence, was we wanted to do Halloween with an ape as the killer meets like a Mel Brooks Zucker Brothers type of spoof movie with low budget trauma style gore, you know? That was kind of what we were aiming for. In addition to like King Kong Lives and like Going Bananas and Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes, the first movie we watched to kick off sort of like what kind of cheesy low budget ape movie we should make, we watched the movie Schlock by John Landis. You know, he made that movie, that was his first film, and he was 21 years old. So I kind of thought that, like, well, this is my first movie, so let's see what he did. And that's why there's a scene in Psycho Ape where Nancy and the ape and Matthew, the collie, are playing fetch with the banana peel. Like, that's straight out of Schlock. Instead of, you know, a banana peel, they used a stick, and they're playing fetch with a stick. So, you know, that was our kind of wink to Schlock, like, hey, you know, this is what we're doing.
So it's interesting to me too that you talked about how you shot it sort of in pieces. Like, obviously with a lot of movie shoots, it's a 10-day schedule, or it's a, you know, 3-week schedule, or whatever the case may be. But you shot this over the course of, like, was it mostly on weekends, or how did you do it?
It was Psycho Ape Thursdays. That was how we did it.
Got it.
Yeah, my roommate would come home from work and Greg would come over and we'd have some sort of loose plan for the day. It was either like we're going to write today or we're going to shoot a kill scene today. And we had a lot of people sort of on a queue where it's like, you know, we're doing your kill scene this Thursday. And we'll we got somebody else who, it's like, are you ready for next Thursday? You know, come into town and we'll shoot your kill scene for this Thursday. Like, the first kill scene we shot was the girl getting her leg cut off with a banana. She's reading, you know, a magazine outside next to a tree. And that was the first scene that we shot for the movie. It was just a test shoot. That was the first kill we shot. The first scene we shot was the ape emerging from behind the house and Greg's dog attacking the ape and then wrestling on the ground and stuff. That was our test shoot. We weren't even sure if we were going to use any of that. But the first kill was the girl getting her leg amputated by a banana. And then from there, each following Thursday was just another kill scene. And people were coming in from, like, Idaho. People were coming in from Tennessee. They were making these long treks to Michigan so they could get killed in a movie called Psycho Ape, you know? Like, they didn't really know what they were getting in for or what they were getting into because, you know, we were posting behind-the-scenes pictures and we were, like, posting teaser trailers and stuff, kind of posting clips as we were going. to give people an idea of what the movie was. And they would get, they were so excited about this project that they would just drive hours and hours to get their fake heart ripped out of their bodies, or, you know, the Banana Man sign spinner guy, Bob, he came from New York. He drove all the way down from New York and he brought his own banana costume, not really knowing what we were going to be doing that day. And we ended up covering him in ground beef and chocolate pudding and corn and stuff because the ape rips his face off and defecates on him. And, you know, that was a scene that we just improvised. We didn't know what we were doing that day. He just showed up with this banana costume and a sign. And we were like, okay, we're just going to go film outside of a Walgreens, spin the sign. The ape's going to chase you. We're going to end up here, I guess. And then we're going to dump you. We're going to cover you in all this crap. And then it ended up being, you know, this really funny scene that we then shot, you know, later with the newscasters and just married the two scenes together, you know. And now that scene has made someone vomit, which is just absolutely crazy.
It's such a refreshing way to do things. And it seems to me, you know, there's so much energy coming across in the movie. There's so much. It just seems like you guys had so much fun making it. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah. You know, we tried to keep it fresh. We, every day was something different, you know, very run and gun, not really taking ourselves too seriously, obviously, and just trying to make a movie that made us laugh. So we kind of thought if the movie makes us laugh, other people probably will laugh too. Cause we just wanted to make something dumb. You know, I've been going to horror conventions for about 5 or 6 years now, and I'll pick up movies, you know, from other independent filmmakers, and they take their stuff so seriously. You know, they make these 2-hour epics for $1,000, and it's like, scale it back, you know, edit it down, make a 60-minute thing that people can just kick on and have fun with it. You know, everybody wants to like break out and everything, and I get that you want to take your art seriously, but I think you have to also know like your shortcomings, you know, and really embrace that and make it funny, you know. Like if you have a small effects budget, then, you know, now you have a comedy on your hands because your effects are going to look cheesy and bad. So embrace that, you know, really poke fun at that. So that's what we set out to do was, you know, we had a couple $1,000 for our budget, but it went towards New York because traveling to New York was expensive. And then it went towards our cast because, you know, putting them up in hotels and feeding them was expensive in New York. So at the end of the day, our effects budget was nothing. All of our limbs are just rubber limbs that I acquired from, you know, Spirit Halloween. And, you know, they're terrible, but that's part of the charm, I think. You know, just it's really, really is just like a do-it-yourself, just splatter horror comedy. But, you know, we fully knew what we were making. And I think that's the difference between a lot of other indie stuff is they try to make like the next big slasher film. They try to create like their own slasher character. And you can't just create something out of nothing. It has to, I don't know, you just have to start from scratch, or you have to start small and then grow. But a lot of these people try to kick open the door and just create like a franchise where it's like, we have 3 movies out the gate already. And it's like, man, that's too much. You know, like take your time. We set out to make a 60-minute movie. So through shooting the movie week by week by week, Greg would edit the footage. So once we hit 60 minutes, we were like, we're done. We did have more in our initial script outline. It was a larger script, but we just didn't get to everything because we knew when to pull the plug. You know, like we're done. You know, this movie, we don't want a 90-minute psycho wave. It's too long. And I think that's what helps the movie is it does have this energy. It doesn't overstay its welcome. You know, not every joke is hilarious. You know, some people get tired of all the banana gags. And, you know, it starts to wear them down a little bit. I get that, you know, but that's just kind of what this movie is. It's just, we threw everything at the wall to see what stuck, and we just kept going.
How much, you know, with having Kansas Bowling in the movie, speaking of other directors, you know, she did B.C. Butcher, as you mentioned, and she has more projects coming out soon, and she does a lot of, you know, different stuff. how much sort of input did she have? Was there that sort of collaborative process while you guys were making things where you were just sort of like coming up with some ideas on the spot while you were shooting?
I mean, she had some funny lines that she improvised in the movie. Like, she's got one of my favorite lines where when she's feeding the ape bananas, she points to one and she asks, you know, don't bananas ever get boring? Do they ever get dull? And like emphasizes the dull sticker on the banana. You know, that was her line. She also improvised a lot of the lines of like when she's sitting on the couch and flipping through like the channels and stuff, and the ape is picking fake bugs out of her wig. You know, she, all of her lines that she says flipping through the, you know, TV channels, that was all her. You know, she has a really funny line about like, you know, she really likes Ronald Reagan and how he dealt with the AIDS crisis. And it's just like a total throwaway line that like has no context to the scene whatsoever, but like that was her line. But for the most part, when we were shooting, I mean, she would just run with the ape down the street, or if we were in New York or something, it's just, hey, go run through Times Square, and she would just go do it, you know? So that was really helpful, you know, that was really nice that she just embraced kind of the lunacy of what we were doing.
That's great. I think it's hard for me to pick because there's a lot of great stuff in the movie, but I think my favorite scene is the scene where there is a very heated discussion about Ratatouille and Toy Story. And I'm just curious how that came about, who those people were, if you knew them very well, and if most of, I assume most of that just sort of accidentally happened.
Yeah, initially, those girls are sisters in real life. They are friends of mine. And I invited them to do like a trick-or-treating scene in the movie. We didn't really have a place for it. We were just kind of like making it up. We didn't know that all of a sudden we would have a scene take place on Halloween, but it just kind of seemed like it fit, you know, like if we're going to have sort of a Halloween parody, then we should have at least one scene take place on Halloween, I guess. We didn't really know what we were going to be doing with them. So when the day came and they showed up, one, the younger sister said that she knew the Ratatouille monologue, and none of us really knew what that meant. Like, I've seen Ratatouille, but it's been a couple of years, so I didn't know what the famous monologue was. So she recited it once, and we were like, okay, I guess we'll film that, and if the scene goes on for too long, we'll just cut it. You know, we'll just cut to them saying trick or treat at the door and the ape killing them, and then there just won't be a Ratatouille monologue. What ended up happening, obviously, it all plays out on camera in real time. She did the monologue, and then they started arguing over which movie was better, between Toy Story or Ratatouille. But that's a real, genuine argument that was captured on camera. And they just kept going and going and going. And Greg, the cinematographer, you know, started zooming in and, you know, panning and, you know, walking around them to make it seem like cinematic, and they weren't breaking. Like, they weren't like, they weren't stopping what they were doing. They weren't acknowledging the camera. They were just arguing for real because they're sisters. And so we just happened to capture a moment in their sibling rivalry existence of them arguing about these two movies. And the initial cut of that argument was probably like 12 minutes long. And then he trimmed it down to about 7. And as it exists in the movie, it's about 5.5 maybe. But I mean, it went on for even longer than what you see in the movie. And you can see my neighbor kind of hanging out in the back, smoking a cigarette on his balcony. He didn't know what we were doing. I don't even know who that person was. He just was my neighbor. But we never crossed paths again. So he just, you know, in his life must have this weird memory of these people arguing about Ratatouille and Toy Story, you know, right in the courtyard of our apartment building, and he just has no context for what that was. Like, that to me is one of the funnier parts, is just him hanging out having a cigarette. But yeah, that was just a totally spur of the moment, wasn't supposed to happen thing that ended up in the movie.
It's so funny. I want to ask you about what you might have coming up next, but you mentioned Greg. He has a new movie coming out soon with Kansas and Kansas' sister Parker and Whitney Moore. Is that right?
Well, he hasn't shot anything yet. He just launched a Indiegogo, and he's trying to raise funds for this new movie that he's making out in L.A. He moved out to L.A. last year. Maybe it was the year before. So he's trying to make a movie out there with Whitney and Kansas and her sister Parker, but he needs to, you know, he needs the budget. You know, he needs to be able to pay these people and, you know, feed them and, you know, put them up and all this other stuff. Cause he's also going to have like stop motion in his movie and everything too. So it's going to require a much larger budget than Psycho Ape, where, you know, Psycho Ape, we only asked for like $1,000 and we got 7,500, which is crazy. But his movie, because, you know, he's going a little bit bigger and he wants to have, you know, special effects, like good quality special effects. And he's trying to actually make like a real movie now that isn't just some run and gun, no holds barred, whatever, you know, bonkers comedy. You know, he's trying to get some funds together to make like a real movie now. So that's his project. And he does have, you know, those actors and Bill too. I think Bill is on board as well. So they're all cast, and now it's just a matter of raising money to film this movie.
Gotcha. And then what about you? Do you have any plans for the future, or are you kind of still focusing on, you know, getting Psycho Ape out there and doing more screenings, or?
Well, I'm trying that, but I last year ran a Kickstarter. I may have done it too soon, like while we were still in the middle of a pandemic, you know. Things have cooled down, you know, now, but at the time, you know, I ran a Kickstarter, and it was for a Frankenstein film that I want to make, and I made like half of what I asked for Psycho Ape. So, you know, Psycho Ape is a micro budget movie, so this Frankenstein movie is going to be like a micro budget movie, you know. But this film is going to be, it's called The Cult of Frankenstein, where this dozen or so cult members gather at a farm, which I have a location in Michigan for that. So they can squat and conduct their own sort of like, they want to create their own Frankenstein creation. So they're sort of like the Manson family almost, but meets Wicker Man or Midsommar, where they're stealing body parts from like local morgues or sacrificing their own limbs for the greater good because they want to stitch together their own Frankenstein monster. And that's like the first half of the movie. I've got two distinct halves. I'm kind of comparing the structure to like Psycho or Death Proof, where the first half is like folk horror with, you know, elements of Manson family, this, you know, hanging out with this group of people, and they're all going to be wearing like white Jesus robes and wearing different style Frankenstein pullover masks that I got from Amazon. And they all have different distinctive looks. But then the second half is Bill Whedon will be playing like a great, great, great grand descendant of Dr. Frankenstein. And he's been conducting his own experiments, and he's created this army of really like low rent Frankenstein monsters who have been, he's been pitting them against each other, like UFC style, and charging, you know, admittance to watch these like fights, these like backyard Frankenstein fights. And the monster that the cult has created makes its way down, like makes its way home, you know, and discovers that, you know, this great grand descendant has been using his doctor skills for, you know, monetary gain and not for science. And so he, in a classic monster movie fashion, you know, destroys the castle, destroys all the monsters, brings, you know, this Dr. Frankenstein down with him. And, you know, we have the last shot of the movie. I'm going to get like a miniature castle and I'm going to crumble it in rubble. And that'll be the end of the movie. So that's why, like, it's two different movies, but I like that. You know, I like how Death Proof is kind of like two different movies. And I like how Psycho is two different movies, because the characters who you think are going to be the main characters disappear halfway through, but you have a character who is sort of the tether between the two halves. Like with Psycho, it's Norman Bates, and with Death Proof, it's Stuntman Mike. So my tether is this Frankenstein that the cult creates. So I have a farm location. I have costumes for everybody, you know, Jesus robes and Frankenstein masks. And I have, you know, a Dr. Frankenstein lab coat for Bill ready to go. And I have a bunch of, you know, fake limbs, more Frankenstein costumes, like actual Frankenstein costumes that I'm going to throw on people, and they're going to wrestle each other, you know, in somebody's backyard. And I'm going to have a big crowd of people, you know, with dollar bills in their hands, you know, shaking, like, you know, betting on these monster fights. So that's going to be the movie.
Well, if you need someone in the cult with a long red beard, you know who to call. Just give me a buzz.
For sure, man. Definitely. Yeah, I need I do have about a dozen people in mind, like, just, you know, to be background extras, you know, because, you know, not everybody's going to have a line, but I need enough people to be wearing, you know, masks. It's just to fill a space, you know, like the cult has to look like more than six people.
Well, it sounds super fun. Best of luck with it. Continued success with Psycho Ape. And I really appreciate you, you know, taking some time to talk to us. Thank you very much, Addison.
No, thank you, man.
Listen up, maniacs. Do you have a question or a comment? Would you like to send some bourbon to Uncle Lloydy? You can contact the gang on Facebook at B-Movie Mania. You can also drop them a line at bmoviemania.com. Reach out, touch them. They are touching themselves, and they might just reach back. I'm Lloyd Kaufman saying, see you next time on B-Movie Mania. Woohoo!